Unceded Airwaves broadcasts every week from the traditional, ancestral, and ceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. You're listening to Season 2, Episode 27 of Unceded Airwaves. On today's show, Mario shares an interview with Roy Henry Vickers from the Peace Dancer book launch through UBC Reads Sustainability. We've got some news on the upcoming Vancouver Indigenous New Media Festival, and we'll discuss some of the fallout of the appropriation prize controversy that we discussed on the show last week. Tanche, Carly, Dishnikanshon. Hello, my name is Carly. My ancestry is Cree Métis on my dad's side and Icelandic Scandinavian settler on my mom's side. My Métis family is originally from Treaty 1 territory, but I was raised as an outsider outside of the community on traditional Stolo territory. I acknowledge that I'm an uninvited guest on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people. Many thanks to the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people who host us today on their territory.
And hello, my name is Mario. I am Niskut from my mother as well as of European ancestry. I am joined here on the unceded territory of the Musqueam people. I'm so honored to have a chance to participate in the Indigenous Collective here today. Is there anything more there?
This is just, we can just talk about who we are.
Yeah, oh, right. Yeah. So, I guess I am still a student in the First Nations Indigenous Studies program here at UBC, but I also do a lot of other stuff out there in the community. So if you're in Vancouver and you see me around, give me a shout. I'd be more than happy to chat with you, especially if you're curious about what it is that we do here at CITR. Our goal here is that we strive to center Indigenous voices on our show and build narratives that empower Indigenous peoples. Self-representation in the media is something that Indigenous people do not often have access to. The show gives us the opportunity to share and define who we are as Indigenous people. Indigenous cultures are incredibly diverse, and the nuances of our diversity are not always represented in mainstream broadcast media.
It can be hard to find positive Indigenous role models represented in the popular media, so this show offers an opportunity to highlight some influential Indigenous peeps.
Yeah, if you can relate to these goals of the show and are wondering how to get involved, please reach out. You can always reach us on our social media, Facebook, Twitter. I think we're working on Instagram. I'm definitely on Instagram.
Yeah.
If you have a voice for decolonization, then we want to hear from you. Everyone is welcome. And there is no experience necessary. Our weekly meeting is, we've changed that now to Monday right after the show, so around 12 p.m. Monday morning or afternoon. So if you want to get involved but don't want to be on air, there are plenty of other ways to participate in this collective. This week, you know, we're playing all Indigenous music, but we're also getting all Indigenous content, which is fantastic.
Yeah, Carly? That's right. You can follow Unceded Airways on Facebook and Twitter. If you are aware of a great Indigenous artist, send us a tweet along with the hashtag Unceded Music, or send a Facebook message at Unceded Airwaves, and we'll do our best to get it on the air. If we play a song you send us, we'll give you a shout out. We're always looking to hear from our listeners about what you're up to, so let us know about any Indigenous artists that you're into right now, what events you're attending or promoting. We'd love to hear about that. As always, we'll post a link to the podcast of this episode after the show. We'll have our weekly unceded events listening to share a little later in the show.
Yeah. And we just want to make sure that we give a proper shout out to everybody that are still occupying their traditional territories, such as the Mattie Lee of the Gitxsan Nation, Unist'ot'en of the Wet'suwet'en peoples, those occupying the Liliu Island and the Tsimshian territory, Chilcotin Nation, who are still battling the Taseko mines, and
the Natshonayaktun, Trondekwetchen, Tetlikwetchen, and Vuntekwetchen people who are fighting to protect the Peel River watershed. We're still waiting. That's still sitting with the Supreme Court of Canada, and we're waiting to hear back on that, how that's going.
And we also want to thank from our sponsors, NORAD Electric, the Tahltan owned and operated, formed 30 years ago. They are a commercial, industrial, and residential electric work company, mostly in the mining industry, but owned and operated by the Tahltan Nation. As well, we want to thank Decolonizing Water. Decolonizing Water Project aims to support water security for Indigenous communities. The project is funded by the Social Science and Humanities Research Council. The project will run from 2016 to 2023 and brings together leading Indigenous thinkers, natural scientists, artists, lawyers, and community members. Rooted in Indigenous law, it will use the most innovative Western science advancements in monitoring technology to create hybridized water governance and monitoring program.
So first up, are we going to play a song first, or are we going to go straight to the interview, Mario?
I think we can go straight to the interview. I have that lined up, and then we can kind of take care of some of the technical things that we still have to do and on our end behind the scenes. And also, if you have a chance and you just want to check us out live to see what we're doing, we are on Facebook Live right now at the Unceded Airways Facebook page. So you can see us taking care of that extra stuff. But yeah, we'll go straight into an interview that I did with Roy Henry Vickers back in March. I had an opportunity to not only sit through his storytelling of one of the books that he was doing, but also right after that, sit down with him for a good conversation and interview. So without any further delay, here is myself with Roy Henry Vickers. Communum speaking Musqueam peoples. Today's segment, hello and welcome to Unceded Airwaves, CITR 101.9, broadcasting to you from the unceded ancestral territories of the Hunkaminum speaking Musqueam peoples. Today's segment is a pre-recorded interview conducted March 2nd at the UBC First Nations Longhouse at the special event UBC Reads Sustainability, presenting Roy Henry Vickers. My name is Mario. I identify as Niska from the House of Nisjosh, which is in Lakotsap. As well, I am of European settler ancestry from my father's side. This afternoon, I am joined with world-renowned artist and author, Roy Henry Vickers. Roy, afwilawilna. How are you?
I'm fine.
Roy, how would you like to introduce yourself for today?
I've been going over that in my mind, and I've never really... We're in Coast Salish territory, in Musqueam territory, and I carry a name given to me from Simon Charlie in Cowichan, and it's Chulhulanuch. So in the big houses here, that's what they would know me as if I came in there. I carry the chieftainship Tlakwagila from the House of Waukas in Rivers Inlet, in a place we call Wikinuch, or Owakino, as it's been called for so long. And back home where I grew up, they call me Lopeskiik, and that means Eagle Rock. And the Haidas have a name for me, and it translated, it means he paints with his spirit, and it's Gotlandai Kudlan Ulgaiga. So those are what some of the people know me as, and on the coast of British Columbia.
Can you share with us today your experience storytelling at the UBC Longhouse?
Oh, yeah. Nothing I was expecting. You know, as storytellers, we are called to be centered in who we are when we're speaking to people, and not to have a pre-planned way of exactly what you're going to do. And it was kind of strange because of all of my itinerary, everything's exact. We're going to do this and this and this and this. And when I came here, I thought, all right, I'm going to tell the story. I should introduce it. But when I was introduced, as she was introducing me, Barbara, she talked about the totems in the learning center, and I had never realized that my brother Walter Harris, who calls me Skanwihas, big fireweed, or the plant of the big fireweed, that was his totem I was standing beside. And so for me, what happened immediately was I was grounded. And Walter's gone, but he's part of my life every day. And his son, who helped him carve that bowl, is part of my life. So it was another one of those situations where you're being introduced and you're going to do something you had planned to do, but it changes immediately. And you're called to respond to that. So for me, it was telling this story and yet realizing that there was another story that I was part of, that was part of the occasion, and that I should share that with the people before I went to tell the story of Peace Dancer. And so for me, it was, the best word I can say is grounding. It put my roots deep into my storytelling life.
Yeah, it's always wonderful when being so far away from home, we can have these reminders of the people that are in our life that make it that much more special.
Yeah.
Did you come all the way from north just for today?
Just right from Walter's home. I live like 4 kilometers down the river from where Walter used to live. And I came down 2 days ago, drove an hour to Smithers, and then jumped on the plane and flew to Vancouver. And then I went and spoke to the Native Education College the first day, and then here at UBC for these 2 days.
Wonderful. Well, we're honored to have you here today. Peace Dancer is the last book in the Northwest Coast Legend series. What are some of the themes and topics that you explore in the book?
Well, Peace Dancer is a story that has been told to me, and it's been told in the village of Kitkatla since the time of the flood. And that's what the story is really about, is the great flood that happened, and there are stories among people all over the globe. Why? Because it happened. And so this story was told to me by a storyteller when I was a young man, and I've been telling it ever since. And I realize today that the story, which involves why the flood happened, that the people had lost their way, and that the Creator was angry, and so the storm came and the flood came and killed many people. And those who survived in our village made up their minds that they would put together a dance called the Simhalait, which translated is the Peace Dance. And it's called the Peace Dance because the dancer is called to do this dance to remind the community that this happened and that we should follow the laws of love and respect for the world around us, for each other, for the animals, for the whole world. And so today, the world, the globe, is our canoe. And we call it the global village, right? So I use the canoe as the allegory of pulling together. And if we pull together and sing together and pray together and cry together, the canoe will go in a good way. Mm. And that's what the story is about. And today we have, with our technology, the power to completely destroy this world. And it seems to me that that's what we're doing. And so for me, it's more important to tell this story today than it ever has been in my 70 years.
Would you explain some of your earlier influences? You mentioned during the talk earlier, Henry Hunt, some audio recorded archives, as well as attending the Kassan School of Art.
Just as you're asking that question, I could smell yellow cedar, and I could hear the swish of a hand plane in Jimmy Nelson's boathouse in Kitkatla, next door to our house. And I used to go over there and watch him working with wood, making a boat. And I now know that that was where my love of working with wood came from, by this man who was so gifted as a woodworker. And when we moved from the village of Kitkatla, it was not a conscious thought of who I was, like a Tsimshian or a Haida or a Quagyilth or an Englishman. I was just a person, and so was everybody else in the world. And when we eventually moved to Victoria the year after I went to residential school, I caught up to my family in Victoria, and I was lost. I was just freaking lost. And I didn't know what to do. I hated school. I came across discrimination. I didn't know what the hell that was. Like, what? Why would you not like me? You don't even know me. And when I found out, I thought, well, the poor guy doesn't even know. He doesn't know all the things I know, or he wouldn't even think that way about me. And so that pushed me into finding out more about who I was. So if I look like that to him, what do I look like to other people, and who am I? And during the 60s, when this happened, that was when Roots was happening, and the black people were discovering their roots, and that they weren't Negroes from North America, that there were black people from Africa. Yeah. And it was easy for me to find people who could help me, because I wanted to know, well, who am I, and what's a Tsimshian, and what is Kitkhadla, and who is the Haida man who was my great-grandfather, and how come I'm more Kwakwala than a Heiltsuk than anything else, and why did these English people that are half of me, why did they think we were so ignorant when we are not? And that led me to Henry Hutt. And I would go down to Thunderbird Park in Victoria and just stand there and watch Henry carving. And he just got used to me being around and invited me in, put a knife in my hand, said, yeah, you want to give me a hand, pal? And that took me back to Jimmy Nelson in the village. I didn't feel like, oh, I can't do this. I just started working with him, and that cedar got into my blood, and the love of creating something out of wood just became part of my soul. And also during that time, in my looking and asking questions, starting to work as an artist, Henry told me to go to Kasan. So I went to Kasan, which was an art school in Hazleton. So I was going back home, going back to where all my friends were. And Walter Harris was one of the senior carvers there at the time, and I spent a lot of time with him. And when I finished Kasan, I began my career as an artist, but I was still struggling with the fact that we are modern day Indians, not I use a chainsaw on a totem pole. Yeah, why? Well, because we have chainsaws and it's way easier, and I'm sure if my great 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 grandfather had one, he would be using it too, making a canoe. So it was those sorts of those concepts about First Nations peoples that I wanted to just break them down and say, look, this is, I am an authentic artist because I am. I don't have to use authentic tools, except that I do use, my knives are all traditional knives because there's nothing better. But I wanted to find other ways of creating images to attract people to my father's culture and my father's, to the Heiltsuk, the Haida, the Coast Salish. And I came to the realization that I could do hand-pulled silk screen prints. So then I started studying prints, and who is this? Well, who are the people that do this? Are there any of my people that do this? No. But there's Holman Island and Baker Lake organizations back east that do Inuit prints. And then I studied Japanese woodblock prints, and Hokusai and Hiroshige from Japan from centuries ago were some of my greatest teachers, because they loved their culture, they loved their land, and that's what inspired them to create the images. So they just created the images inspired by what was happening around them. And so that's what I began to do, and break down the barriers. As Chief Dan George put it, break down the barriers of our isolation. And to me it was like, yeah, I'm gonna use color. I'm gonna paint that mountain. And so that's what I've been doing. And that's when the world changed for me. And it wasn't many years after that that it was actually 7 years after I became more of a contemporary artist than a traditional artist that an original painting was given to Queen Elizabeth, one of my paintings. And that changed my whole life.
That's
long answer to a short question.
Yeah, that's a great answer to a great question. So much of life is showing up, mm-hmm. being present. with that genuine intention that you discussed earlier of love and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A short aside here. Before becoming an artist, you had a previous employment aspiration. What was that?
Well, I had a number of jobs. I first started washing dishes in the Empress Hotel in Victoria, and then I started renting cars for Hertz Rent-A-Car, and that sucked. So I thought, I got to get a better job than this. And I wound up getting a job in the Saanich Fire Department in Victoria. And it was actually a case of reverse discrimination that got me the job.
How so?
Most people who get jobs in the fire department have family or friends who worked there before, so they have an in somehow. I had nothing. I had grade 12 education. I was the right height. And when I went for my interview, one of the chiefs there knew a lot of First Nations peoples. And Tom Moss was his name. Assistant Chief Moss was his name, and he said to the other assistant chiefs and the fire chief, well, I don't care who else you hire from all of these interviews, but you have to hire Roy Henry Vickers. So that's how I got the job.
Uh-huh.
Incredible. So on the job, I was always making fun, like I have fun. And one of the things I used to say was, well, you know, you guys, everybody wants to be chief here, and you call me chief. and so maybe one day I'll be a chief, but I don't think so. Maybe I should just go and be an artist, because all you guys have been here longer than me, and you're going to be a chief before I am. And they would laugh their heads off at it. But they always used to call me chief, and I never took it as a derogatory term or anything. It's not. I'm not, to me, discrimination doesn't belong in our lives. And I know many of our people don't trust non-First Nations. And it's generational, and it for good reason. But there comes a time when in your life when you need to accept people for who they are. And because that's the way our old culture was. It was inclusive, it was not exclusive. So I felt at home working in the fire department. Never got to be chief, but now I am.
Before we finish, where can we find some of your work, whether that's online or in person?
Yeah, I have an art gallery in Tofino called Eagle Airy Gallery. Airy being the nest of a bird of prey, according to the Oxford's Dictionary, and that's where I have all of my artwork. I built the gallery like a longhouse, and that's where it all goes. But I live up in Hazleton, so I'm seldom in the gallery there. But you can go online, www.royhenryvickers.com, and that will take you straight to the gallery. People can actually contact me, roy@royhenryvickers.com, if they want to talk to me personally or communicate personally. I'm always available.
All right, well, I'll have to do that sometime.
Yeah.
And any last message for the audience before we go?
Well, I was given the Order of Canada, and when they gave it to me, they talked about my my life being a bridge between cultures. And I think that's what we should all be. I would say to my brothers and sisters from wherever they're from, who are indigenous to some nation in Canada, that it's time to understand what happened and accept it and move on. In doing so, we can live the life we're meant to live. We can't always live in mistrust and anger over something that wasn't done to us. It was done to my grandma, it was done to my great-grandfather, but it wasn't done to me. And so I lived a lot of my life in anger. I was called Raging Roy. And I was 45 years old before I found peace. And I found peace when I could just look at that guy in the mirror and say, "You're a good man. You're a good man." Mm-hmm. And for the non-First Nations peoples, I would say, we must come to an understanding of the cultural genocide that has happened. We must honestly look at it and feel it so we have compassion for those around us. And we're all in this canoe together, so the sooner we start doing this, the better it's going to be for all.
Thank you. Toixinyu. Thank you.
Hi, we're Roused by Nature.
And you're listening to
CITR 101.9, broadcasting from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate. Remember Pilate from the New Testament?
What is Pilate? He fiddled well.
Yeah, no, it
wasn't. I've dunked donuts each and every
radio show.
Is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
And welcome back.
You're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the traditional ancestral unceded territories of the Hunkaminum-speaking Musqueam people. And you, if you're just tuning in, that was Zibi Wan. The song is Manitou from the Time Limits EP on RPM Records. Zibi Wan is Anishinaabe from the, Wikwemmikong, unceded First Nation on Manitoulin Island. And before that, we had Mario speaking with Roy Henry Vickers from the Peace Dancer book launch through UBC Reed Sustainability. And that was an amazing. If you missed that, the podcast will be available later on. You should listen to it. It was excellent.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Carly. And so I guess we're going to move into a brief discussion. Talking about last week's show, you delved right into and did an amazing job of putting together a show. I was just blown away in how wonderful that was. Can you tell us a little bit more about, first of all, what the show was like last week? And then I guess we can move into the conversation as a follow-up to last week's show.
Sure. I want to say a huge thank you to Alicia Elliott, who's a Tuscarora writer living in the Brampton area, and to Jacqueline Valencia, a writer from the Toronto area, for calling in and speaking to me about something that I'll unpack shortly, briefly, because I feel like there's been a lot said about it already. But for anyone who didn't catch the show, I also recommend listening to that. Jacqueline and Alicia had a lot to say about the never-ending, seemingly, argument about cultural appropriation, what exactly it means. Is it limiting people's free speech for marginalized peoples to ask to be part of a reciprocal relationship with writers who wish to imagine communities outside of their scope of understanding? So that was it was a great conversation. It was a little intense because we had some technical challenges, but really, really thankful to Jacqueline and Alicia for that, for weighing in.
Yeah, so I got off class a little bit early, popped in, and I walked into the studio and I saw a full team of CITR staff supporting this this endeavor and what it looked like. I wish we had a Facebook live stream that day as well, but I came in, Carly was like, just banning the mic perfectly, and then on the other two mics were Josh holding a cell phone up to the microphone, and who was the other lady?
Oh, it was an intern. I don't remember her name right now, but man, what a superstar.
Yeah,
we're going to post a shout out to her after the show.
You know, just making it happen regardless. You know, there was some system errors where we weren't able to do the proper call-ins the way we'd normally do it, but just kind of doing what we have to do when we're here at Community Radio, so... Yeah, just thank you guys for putting that together. I know, and making it happen regardless.
Yeah, well, and that's it. These conversations apparently have to happen, and it would appear that they have to happen over and over again, which is frustrating. There's a lot of people doing a lot of emotional labor explaining these topics over and over again to people who sometimes it just seems like they're displaying willful ignorance about what cultural appropriation is. So let's get into it. Just for our listeners
Sure.
who aren't, I don't know who hasn't heard about this by now, but of course we're not all on Twitter, which is where a lot of this has been taking place. So a quick rundown.
Yeah, a little recap on what the issue was initially, and then of course, it was talked about here on CITR.
Yeah.
So would you like to lead into that?
Sure. Thanks, Mario. So in the spring issue of Write Magazine, which is the magazine of the Writers Union of Canada, I think it's a quarterly, Hal Niedzwecki, who is the former editor of the magazine, he's since resigned, offered a definition of cultural appropriation that suggested that it was limiting writers from imagining and writing about the perspectives of marginalized communities. He went so far as to suggest that there should be a prize for cultural appropriation. And I should mention that this was in a short editorial piece that prefaced an entire issue featuring Indigenous writers, Indigenous voices. Many of the pieces actually spoke about cultural appropriation specifically, as well as reconciliation, using humor to write about pain and trauma. So it was a piece filled with beautiful, fierce, excellent work, and seemingly undermined for, as far as many of the contributors were concerned, undermined by this strange, glib assertion that cultural appropriation, that there should be a prize for cultural appropriation, and probably more importantly, forwarding this wrong definition about appropriation, that it's limiting the free speech of writers, and that people from marginalized communities or from the Indigenous community I'll speak directly to feel that you are not, as a writer, you're somehow not allowed to imagine and write about what it's like to be from a community that you don't belong to, that you didn't grow up in. So Niedzwecki's opinion was promptly picked up by many senior journalists at the CBC, Rogers Media, the National Post, and the Walrus Magazine, who used his editorial to fabricate a bogus argument about free speech. Some went so far as to pledge money towards an appropriation prize as kind of a sick joke about cultural appropriation. Some of these editors and journalists have apologized. Some have been reassigned positions, and one has even stepped down from his position, while others gleefully continue expanding on a conversation they don't actually understand, or I suspect probably don't care to. So as Mario and I mentioned, we discussed this on last week's show. Jacqueline Valencia and Alicia Elliott had a lot to say about it. And, you know, what I just said there was pretty negative. What I would like to focus on today is some of the positives that have come out of this experience. For one thing, I think a lot more non-Indigenous people are familiar with the voices of writers like Alicia Elliott, Joshua Whitehead, and Kateri Akawenzi-Dam, all of whom were featured in the issue of Write. And really, it's the contributors we should be focusing on and not this problematic editorial. Also, Jesse Wente, who put a tremendous amount of emotional labor into educating people about the importance of stories and context, the amount of context that goes into these stories. I feel like this brought a lot of silent allies out of the woodwork, expressing support for Indigenous writers and perspectives. You certainly saw it on Twitter. We always stay away from the comments section on anything that goes online. But Twitter, I really saw a lot of support from a lot of folks that I feel have supported this fight for a long time, but maybe weren't sure if they should say anything, if they could say anything. I just saw a lot of silent allies come out of the woodwork and take up some of these conversations and often arguments about what cultural appropriation is. So finally, I just want to say as well that, I mean, this is huge. One of the things to come out of this this controversy, we'll call it, is an Emerging Indigenous Voices crowdfunding campaign. It was started by Robin Parker, a lawyer from Toronto, who had hoped to raise $10,000 in 2 months. The fund has already raised nearly $85,000 after, I think it's been like a week or 10 days. I wouldn't be surprised. I put that number down earlier this morning. I wouldn't be surprised if it's just shot up since then. A couple of days ago, I went for a run, and it went up $5,000 in the time that I ran. It's amazing.
Yeah, and where can we find out a little bit more for those that might be interested about the Emerging Indigenous Voices crowdfunding campaign?
Yeah,
or any more of the issues.
Yeah, good call. Yeah. We posted a link to, it's an Indiegogo campaign. And so we posted a link to the Indiegogo campaign on the Unceded Airwaves Facebook page. I'll post another link just so it's right up there at the top by the end of this show. You could Google Emerging Indigenous Voices Indiegogo, and that would probably get you where you need to go. And Yeah, that is it's just shooting up. And in case you're not familiar with crowdfunding, again, I don't know who isn't, but I don't want to take anything for granted.
Yeah.
Every dollar counts. There are folks on there that have contributed $5 up to some very large contributions. So every dollar counts. That's how crowdfunding works. And look at that. We thought but there was a hope to raise $10,000, and it's already nearing $85,000.
That's really beautiful to see people coming out and really supporting, what the future of Indigenous writing could be from the people themselves. And so thank you so much. Was there anything more you wanted to add into that, or were you comfortable with that?
I guess I'll just quickly say that Kateri Akawenzi Dam, whose name you've heard a lot on the last couple of shows, she wrote a piece for the Globe and Mail, and she just said, basically, the debate about cultural appropriation is over, and now it's time for action. And I really agree with this, and I feel like this fund is a good start. There's a lot of work to do, and I think that's it. I'm done debating it, and I think a lot of us are, and now it's time to take action.
Yeah, I can really hear that. One of the things here at CITR, which is really beautiful, you put in that work already last week, and really showcasing what the issue was, but also exploring and allowing space for those voices of people that don't often get to be heard. That opportunity to really share how it affects them and where we'd like to go from there. I think that's the next step. Like just viewing, all right, well, here's this issue. It really it sucked. But we can move beyond it. And there's some beautiful people out there in the world that are really trying to make that happen. So I want to say thank you to Carly, as well as the team here at CITR that did that last week, and the people that are putting together that crowdfunding. Every dollar does count. Indigenous arts often are incredibly underfunded and unrecognized. And so what's really great here at CITR is we have the opportunity to recognize and appreciate those that have come before us and those that will come after us. So without further ado, I guess if that's okay with you, we'll move on to playing a song.
Yeah.
And then maybe we'll do some current events really quickly, and we'll pass off the mics to the next people here who I saw just come into the studio.
Yeah, we got a little bit coming up on the Vancouver Indigenous Media Arts Festival, which is May 25th to 28th. But first, more ZB1.
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate. Remember Pilate from the New Testament?
Pontius Pilate. He fiddled while...
Yeah, no, well, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Night Watch Show on Sunday.
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
Why, sometimes I'd like to take a peppermint and a switchblade and a Cadillac and throw it all on a fire. So
you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Radio for crazy people and the elderly. Oh, yeah.
The most powerful motivational speeches that I have ever heard came from people who told me I couldn't do something. You know why? Because when they told me I couldn't do it, I was bound and determined to show them that I could.
All Access Pass is back for season 2. We are a collectively run weekly program that discusses equity, inclusion, and accessibility issues on and off UBC's campus, including both visible and invisible disabilities. You can catch All Access Pass every Thursdays from 2 to 3 p.m. Anyone can get involved. No experience is necessary. People of all abilities are welcome to join. Check us out on Facebook at All Access Pass or get involved by emailing accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Hey, what is up? We're back here at CITR 101.9 FM with the Unseated Airwaves show. My name is Mario, and we wanted to do a quick events listing before we sign off and hand the mics over to the next crew. So, without further ado, we wanted to talk about what's happening this week here in Vancouver. Is the Vancouver Indigenous Media Arts Festival running May 25th to 28th. Vancouver Indigenous Media Arts Festival is located on the beautiful Coast Salish territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh in Vancouver, B.C. VIMAF's 2017 festival has been named Natsamat, meaning we are one in the Musqueam language, Hunkaminam, provided by Musqueam knowledge keeper Shane Point. I love Shane. I've worked with Shane, actually, in the past, and he's shared that knowledge with me as well, and... You know, every time that's what I think about while I'm here, and really, you know, when we talk about being on unceded territory, specifically Musqueam, you know, it's good to have that reminder. We are one, Natsamat. Vancouver Indigenous Media Arts Festival recognizes the tradition of gathering Indigenous artists and communities together in a modern context to share in the richness of Indigenous media arts. VIMAF's 2017 festival is redistributing the wealth in providing an experiential feast, sharing, gifting, witnessing, and celebrating the media artworks of our powerfully talented community as one people. So, Friday the 26th of May, Turtle Island Shorts program, a variety of short films from local creators and representation from across Turtle Island, which is also known as North America. The selection highlights language and cultural resurgence, speaks to missing and murdered Indigenous women with artistic approaches and social perspectives, including artists such as Elizabeth LaPonce, Kristen Snowbird, and shout out to Nick D'Angeli. So we also have May 2017th is the New Media Presentations Storytelling App, Radio, and Music, including Indians on the Airwaves, a radio documentary program by Janet Rogers. She's holding it strong. I've had a chance to meet her as well. Fantastic work that she's doing, as well as Machinima presentation by Scawinetti from Montreal, also another fantastic artist that's doing some really great and interesting conceptual work that you can find online if you haven't had the chance to check it out. Look up Scawinetti. Standing Rock as well, VR, virtual reality presentation by Michael Running Wolf, I'm not familiar with, from Montana, USA. And this is the first of 156 tickets sold. Take home a cardboard VR goggles. I definitely would love to go and check that out.
So right? Gotta, get your own cardboard VR goggles. And
double
that's
check
for the
my...
Oh, sorry.
My schedule for that. Sorry, I didn't... Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's you. That's you.
So we're so excited about that. VR goggles.
Yeah, we have
get
time
there.
To talk. That's the nice thing. So we have a few more minutes left. I'll leave it off to you then.
Thanks, Mario. May 28th is Youth and International Short Films, a highlight of shorts created with Indigenous youth from Bella Bella and Haida Gwaii in collaboration with Our World. Also, the international selection is from Aotearoa, New Zealand, and it's provided by Mana Wairoa. Oh, that's a New Zealand film festival. I'm familiar, a little bit familiar with that. Also an Indigenous justice event featuring a short film about the Chilcotin journey for justice and a feature-length film called Awake, A Dream from Standing Rock. Tickets are available through Eventbrite, through the VIMAF Facebook page, or at www.vimaf.ca.
Yes, and I also hear that they're looking for volunteers, so they're having a volunteer session on Wednesday. If you check out their website, you should be able to find that as well. And I think that's really it for us today. I want to say a big thanks to our sponsors, NORAD Electric, supplying the finest in commercial, industrial, and residential electrical work from the Tall Tan, owned and operated for over 30 years.
Also thanks to Decolonizing Water, who aims to support water security for Indigenous communities. Decolonizing Water is funded by the Social Science and Humanities Research Council, bringing together Indigenous thinkers, natural scientists, artists, lawyers, and community members. I'm Carly Baker, and big thank you to Mario for being with me here today on Unceded Airwaves, CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded territories of the Hunkiminum-speaking Musqueam people.
Toixinissim. Have a great weekend, y'all. I'll catch you again next week. Take care.
Marcy.
Cool. And we're going over to the next group.